Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode is Festivus 2025. And Tom, we've got a special guest here. We've got JT Genter joining us for our annual celebration of Festivus. Welcome, JT.
Thank you. Great to be here. I was honored to be invited on. Then I realized it must mean I complain a lot or something.
No. We just know that you're rather in tune to the community, and you probably have a little bit better of an understanding of banks and loyalty programs than even we do. And we wanted to, you know, bring some professionalism to the to our Festivus celebration.
Well, I'll take the compliment. Thank you.
We love having you on the episodes. You're a great guest.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. And happy Festivus to all of us.
Happy Festivus to all of us.
just as a refresher for our listeners, Festivus is a non-commercial holiday celebration. This is especially funny, I think, this year as we're recording it on Black Friday weekend, which effectively is Black Friday half November, which effectively becomes, I think, an entire season of Black Fridays. So it's ironic that we're celebrating this non-commercial holiday. It was depicted on Seinfeld, and it depicts December 23rd as a Festivus dinner, an unadorned aluminum Festivus pole, which we have right here, and a couple of practices that I think we all celebrate. The airing of grievances, feats of strength, and the labeling of easily explainable events such as Festivus miracles. I feel like maybe it's unexplainable events, and maybe I just have a typo in my notes. And a pop quiz for anybody who read the book: what episode or what year of Seinfeld did this did we all learn about Festivus?
You tell me every year, and every year I forget.
December 19th, 1997.
The good year.
Can you believe that?
I mean, years ago.
Right? Talk about it, and we're still celebrating it to this day.
I feel like so many Seinfeld episodes are so timeless. It's kind of wild, even though it was, you know, I guess it was many seasons. I don't even know how long it ran, but it's crazy how timeless so much of it is.
Well, Festivus was season 9, and I'm pretty sure they kept going. It truly is. I love Festivus, but I think my favorite little segment of a Seinfeld episode is the rental car one.
Yes, another timeless one.
It is so timeless.
It is
so
timeless.
You can take the reservation, you just can't keep the reservation.
Okay. That happened before.
I'm pretty sure we all have. Well, why don't we jump into it? Generally, the way we do this is we start out with airing of grievances because it's good to get this stuff off our chest. We do one for airline or loyalty programs, and then we'll do one for a bank or that sort of thing. Then we'll follow it with feats of strength, and then we will close it out with our miracles, our Festivus miracles. Okay, so let's jump into airing of grievances. JT, you're our guest this year. So why don't we start with your airline or loyalty program grievance?
So first of all, I jotted down some notes when we were talking about this, and then I learned I only got one. So I had to cross off, you know, the 5 pages worth of grievances that I feel like I could probably go through from AA's, you know, website not helping you book awards easily. I feel like there's so much that there is to grievance. But I feel like the one thing this year that I feel like was most impactful to Katie and my travels was the Southwest changes. So Katie and I had earned a companion pass, like, back and forth year after year, I think since 2018. Last year, Southwest was our second most flown airline. It was just great for those domestic hops. Nothing sexy. It was, you know, open seating, you know, with all the complaints that we have about that. But it worked. It worked. It was something different. And this year, I feel like Southwest decided that the new management was going to just give up all of the competitive advantage that they have, all the differences, and just gut their loyalty program from switching to variable award pricing to gutting the earning rates on like the one getaway, which are now basic fares. You know, you get free bags on the cheapest fares, including on awards. They raised the card annual fees. I feel like they did everything possible to like decimate loyalty, and I feel like travelers are responding. I mean, it was at Chicago seminars. There was a session on Southwest where it was like 10 people there. Because like, I feel like travelers are just giving up on the Southwest program because Southwest is giving up on the flyers. So that's my grievance.
I think that's an excellent one. And just for our listeners' background, the Elliott Group, an activist investor, essentially asserted its will on Southwest and in doing so extracted the soul of Southwest. I mean, there is no love left in Dallas Love Field.
It's true. I feel like it's so well put. I extracted the soul out of it. It's indeed, it's so true.
It's a shame. I mean, this is about the opposite of a miracle when you think about it, because you've taken an airline that the flight attendants had fun, the passengers had fun, everybody enjoyed the experience, even though, quite honestly, even the last few years, with a companion pass, it was still one of the more expensive shows in town. Mm-hmm. But people still went directly to Southwest. They didn't stop at Google Flights. They had that loyalty in. And Elliott Group has essentially been the grim reaper to that amazing culture that Herb Kelleher had established with Roland King.
It's true. I don't think there's any going back from here. I think that they've extracted a soul. There's no putting the soul back in. It's just going to be another domestic airline. You know, dime a dozen. Set to compete, as you said. Google Flights. They want to make sure they show up there, and they're trying to partner with every random airline that they could possibly think of to try to like do connecting trips. They're just trying to be like everyone else rather than being set themselves apart.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's one silver lining to this. There is one silver lining to this, JT.
What's that?
American won't be the worst Texas airline in the country anymore.
Yeah, that's the one silver lining indeed.
Well, Tom, I think your grievance is sort of similar or sort of dovetails with JT's.
Yeah, mine isn't quite as specific. Like, I would say this is a sin. I mean, actually, it's kind of related, right? Because I just think airline loyalty and elite status in general just continues to take hits. And there just seems to be a kind of a death, I think, of elite status, benefits. I think the reason why you're loyal to an airline, why you want to, gain loyalty or earn elite status, the benefits are continuing to degrade. We're hearing a lot about, upgrades that would normally have been complimentary to elite members are being sold at even lower prices, which I guess in a way is a good thing for your average person. But, for those people who spend a lot of time and, butt in seat miles, to get some of these statuses, it continues to be insult to injury. And there, I think the game has definitely, gotten worse and worse to the point where, I think, it's really hard to make an argument where, unless you're like a road warrior and you would have earned it anyway, there's really very little reason, I think, for your average person who's a frequent flyer to, go after some of these loyalty programs and their elite program statuses because, there's just not that much, that the airlines are providing as a benefit. They continue to cut and cut and cut.
That's so true. I mean, it's become more of a world of book the seat you want and not hoping for, this benefit or that benefit. Yeah. I will say that American still has taken good care of me as Nick's Platt in the back of the cabin. I had a couple of flights down to see my folks earlier this month, and I found that just mentioning my Nick's Platt, the drinks came, the snacks, they literally brought like one of each things from each of the options from the first class basket. And I was surprised at that because I have so little expectations with American. I hate to say it. That's just
a defined benefit though for Exec Plat, right? You're supposed to get
Well, not necessarily from the first class snack basket, though.
Well, but I mean, but like when you're sitting in economy and you're an exec plat, you know,
you get a drink.
Entitled to you know, an alcohol beverage and whatever's for sale, which is usually nothing.
Yeah, I mean, you're entitled to a lot, but whether or not they acknowledge that is always the question. But I'll give some accolades, as I did to the American Twitter team, which I think is probably the best aspect of American Airlines, is that Twitter team.
Hands down, yeah. They're great.
Yeah. So for my loyalty program, I did something that was perhaps very niche, but it just sort of hit me because back in September, we flew home on Emirates on that Fifth Freedom flight from Milan Malpensa Airport to JFK, and we had pre-positioned points to be able to do the upgrade. We were tracking how many seats were available, and then in August, Emirates pushes out this restriction, no kids in first class if you're booked on points or point upgrades. And that was a gut punch. It's these small little things, not nearly as impactful as yours, JT, or even yours, Tom, but you know, these small little things, I feel like that is the first chink in the armor, so to speak, of really making the first class experience less attainable.
Your grievance was no surprise to me when I assumed this was going to be one of your grievances.
Emirates reigns fairly supreme in my grievances from year to year, all the way back to Save Rossi Observation
Day. A perennial offender for your grievance.
But I feel like, especially this year, it's not just this. This is a big one, especially for families. But like, Emirates like is no longer a Chase transfer partner, if I remember right. They've devalued Amex transfers. Like, it's interesting how much Amex seems to be really pulling back after partnering with everyone and like trying to make, you know, maybe for very high rates, but you know, first class attainable through their program. And now they seem to be, you know, really almost seemingly regretting that and really trying to pull back and be more solitary, which is an interesting twist. I didn't expect that out of Emirates.
Yeah, and I think if I recall correctly, Citi transfers are even nerfed as well. Like,
that's right.
It's not a one-to-one. So they've really pulled back, and I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. The one gentleman, and I can't remember his name, it's like Mark something like Dude or something like that does a lot of marketing on the loyalty program side.
He flies them so often,
and I have to wonder, is he advising this? Is he contributing to you know, Emirates sort of pulling back from embracing the frequent, well I suppose, the miles and points crowd?
Yeah, as I just pulled up his Twitter, and he showed how Emirates goes above and beyond. He did like a wine tasting in first class, but I mean, I think that's what Emirates is really trying to focus on. They seemingly less and less want award travelers. They want these frequent flyers, high spenders. So yeah, I mean, it's just this change in the loyalty program, a little bit different from what we're seeing from the domestic U.S. airlines, but still the same thing, where rather than a frequent flyer program, it's a frequent spender program.
Yeah, and it's a shame because they don't really have as compelling a product anymore. I mean, the first class seat is nice, but on the A380, their flagship aircraft, I mean, I know they have the Game Changer and the 777, but they have a ton of A380s, and folks love that for the shower and everything. But that seat is, what, 10, 15 years old?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we've hit the airlines. I'm sure that we could spend far more time with grievances. The airlines have given us plenty of fodder. But JT, why don't we jump to the bank side?
Again, my list was so long to get started, but I feel like the one gets overarching grievance I have with banks is just the family bonus restrictions that so many card issuers are putting in, where if you have like the Delta Gold, you can no longer get the bonus of the Delta Blue, or if you get the Delta Reserve, you can no longer get the Gold or the Platinum bonus on those. And then Chase most recently added restrictions for the Ink cards. And I feel like more and more, especially especially for those of us who are seasoned, who've been in the game for a while, it's really restricting just what we can sign up for anymore and earn a bonus. I mean, I guess you can still sign up for some of these without the bonus, but it's really interesting how these banks are really seemingly cracking down, I guess, on our type of people about not letting us get bonuses, especially with these just super overly complicated family bonus restrictions.
Yeah, and the thing is the mileage cost for the redemption side isn't going down as the, we'll say, supply is starting to get sort of siphoned off, right?
Yeah, it feels like prices, you know, continue to go up. We saw so many devaluations, you know, little ones from like the Iberia 34,000 business class to Spain off peak dates, go up to 40,000, still a great deal, but that's still, you know, a jump. To, you know, Qantas raising rates. We're seeing stealth devaluations with Air Canada, Aeroplan awards on United, and Life Miles awards on United. Like, we're seeing all of these like little chinks in the armor, as you said earlier, in value. Yet, as you said, also the supply side, you know, there's restrictions there. I guess it's just so many people are getting into the points and miles game nowadays that there's probably a dearth of points from high spenders. And yeah, so I understand why the banks are doing it, but still my grievance.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great grievance. Tom, you took a different approach on this one, didn't you?
I did. You know, I was thinking about things a little bit more kind of philosophically. And, you know, honestly, it's a thought that I came up, you know, when we were talking about one of our more recent trips, right, where we did a bunch of lounge hopping. And, you know, it really did occur to me that, you know, banks, you know, have really done a great job of kind of, you know, popularizing the idea of the airport lounge and how it's a great feature. And now, you know, there's so many people that have access and people love airline lounges and airport lounges where you can, you know, obviously get some food and drink and, you know, kind of do a little bit of relaxing. But they've really commoditized it. You know, I think it's become something where, you know, back in the day, you know, like 20, 30 years ago, you know, there were a lot fewer lounges. And honestly, the amenities were probably not quite as nice. I mean, I think the banks also probably did a good job of kind of raising the bar of what a reasonable lounge looks like and what they serve and what they have. You know, generally they have hot food and, you know, more than just prepackaged cheese and crackers or something. You know, which was kind of more the norm, I guess, 20 years ago. But what they have also done is they've made it more of a common thing that more and more people have access to. So really, you know, the lounge access is now much more of a commodity, something that a lot more people have. And as such, you know, the places are much more crowded, not as relaxing, not as exclusive. So I would say that's a grievance, I think, for the banks. You know, I think they did a good job of, in some cases, raising the bar and making it a popular amenity. But they also did a great job of, unfortunately, turning it into commodity and making it something that's a little bit less pleasant.
And it's interesting how they did that, right? So American Express had the Platinum or had the Centurion lounges, I should say. And they were just great for the beginning for Platinum, yes, and Centurion cardholders. And now we joke. I mean, how many times on this podcast have we joked about the chicken thighs on the buffet meal?
It is chicken thigh central there. And, you know, the thing is the exclusivity of things like the Platinum card. You know, there really was very few people. I mean, it only made sense to spend, you know, the $500 or whatever back when the annual fee was $500, I guess, which is, I guess, a long time ago, or $495 or whatever it was. But that probably only made sense if you actually did use the lounge and travel benefits frequently. But, you know, now a lot of people have the Platinum card. It seems to be something that seems to be in almost everybody's wallet, it seems.
And it's $200 or $300 more, right? $200?
Yeah, $8.95 now with the couponification, which was another, yes, grievance of mine that didn't make the get to the top of the list. But yeah, no, it's true. I think the card issuers would be thrilled if they were able to just build a crap ton more lounges, like snap their fingers and just have them open. You know, charge $8.95. You know, sell as many of the cards as they can and fill up these lounges. But that it's such a slow process for them to open up these new lounges. So I see it from the card issuer's stance where they're trying to crack down on like the And maybe that's even part of the strategy, is because slightly less appealing, you know, appealing enough that you're still going to pay the $8.95 annual fee, but if the lounge isn't that special, like, they can kind of reduce the crowding by, like, making it just that much less appealing. I have no idea if that's their actual strategy, but I could see that kind of being a strategy, just because they're dealing with so much overcrowding, because I don't know, those bloggers are doing such a good job of selling everyone on the Platinum card, I guess.
Well, and it becomes suddenly you have to understand the rules. You need to understand what lounges are going to hold hard and fast to those rules. I'll give you an example. The Chase Sapphire lounges have, I think, a 3-hour rule. You can't get in more than 3 hours before your flight. And that ends up really messing you up if you're making a connecting flight.
Oh, I didn't realize they also restricted on connecting flights.
I thought they were more... Yeah, I think they're more like liberal when it comes to when you're connecting, though. That's why sometimes they ask, are you connecting?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I was walking around the terminal in Boston over, I think it was Memorial Day weekend, because I had a 6-hour layover in Boston and they weren't letting me in until 3 hours out.
Oh.
So, we joke about lounge dragons at the airline lounges. And now you've got similar things where either folks are not observing the right policies, or they're making up rules just because they're concerned about that overcrowding.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a grievance too, Trevor, right? I think you probably got one. You are the most aggrieved, maybe.
Oh my gosh!
Of the three of us.
I am very aggrieved. American Express back in February, there was a big string of shutdowns, and unfortunately, they shut down my wife, my player too, and I don't think I shared it on the podcast prior, because we try not to focus on that on that sort of thing. We're more about the stories we get from the miles and points, but that's been a big hit, and I know that Sam and Robert on the main show talk a lot about, and have talked a lot about, shutdowns and everything. This one hit me personally. I realize my grievances are very, very me-oriented, and so I apologize for that. But I know there were many, many other people that got swallowed up in a variety of shutdowns, whether it was American Express, Synchrony, and some others out there. And so I think largely it's banks shutting us down is my grievance. And, you know, just personally speaking, my player two losing her accounts, that was a pretty big hit.
It feels on point to have a personal grievance, you know. It seems kind of in line with the Seinfeld ethos.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I almost feel like George Costanza with these grievances.
American Express!
You do it better than I do.
Well, but it's not just you, as you're saying. Like, other people are getting caught up in these, and sometimes, you know, I define fair, of course, but, like, some of these, I've heard shutdowns where it is just, it seems mind-boggling that they'd blame the cardholder for doing something that seems, you know, completely legit, like working with this is a few years ago, but, like, working with a Amex small business, you know, employee who was selling Amex small business cards, it was offering, you know, a better than market offer. Like, you can't really blame people who are signing up for that. And if people have signed up for one and get their entire account shut down, I mean, it seems like Amex reversed some of those, but like some of these, it's like, well, that's not the cardholder's fault. That's definitely on Amex. Like, the Amex should eat that. Right. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I agree. And the thing is with all these shutdowns, what happens? George Costanza's wallet is getting thinner and thinner.
That's true.
I had to try to get that one in there, given how thick all of our wallets in theory could be.
Just one wallet? I have several wallets between passport wallets full of cards, literally two different passport wallets full of cards, plus everyday wallet. Combine all of them, I might have a George Costanza rivaling wallet.
Oh, absolutely. I keep two different wallets with me, my everyday wallet as well as a travel wallet that has the Priority Pass lounges, because now suddenly you need to have the Chase Sapphire Reserve Priority Pass card to get into the Chase Lounge, and then there's the Capital One to get into the Capital One Lounge, and yeah, I feel like we're going backwards with the commoditization of lounges. But I think we covered a lot of grievances here. I like how you guys sort of, us all, really sort of, you know, painted a picture of 2025 for better or for worse, and some of the challenges that we've seen personally, but also that we're seeing industry-wise. And I think even with the, you know, being personal on some of these grievances, I think we also take personally things like the Elliott Group just extracting the soul out of Southwest. I mean, like Southwest or don't, it's a beautiful story, and Herb Kelleher's, like, what, 30 or 40 year crusade, effectively, of getting that airline to survive, you know, between the Wright Amendment, between just being able to do 10-minute turns, being able to just be a compelling airline, and just to see all that work just melt away.
Rest in peace, Southwest. Rest in peace.
Well, it wasn't just, I mean, they didn't just survive, they thrived. I mean, I just double-checked it, but Southwest literally was profitable for 47 consecutive years using this model. And they, the return, if I remember right, they issued dividend checks every single quarter for, like, some 100, you know, 200 quarters in a row, something like that. And it's just a remarkable success story, and it's just so sad to see that just decimated.
Yeah, and when you talk about that, they were profitable after 9/11 because of fuel hedging. I mean, these guys knew what they were doing, and suddenly Elliott Group comes in and then just, you know, off with their heads. I shouldn't say that. Elliott Group comes in and just pulls that soul right out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see if they if they decide, if they regret some of the decision making that has been made. But, you know, you never know. In some cases, it might be the right call. You know, I mean, it's they were leaving money on the table for cultural reasons, right? Because of the culture and the soul of the company. But, you know, we'll see whether or not that ends up being a profitable decision to kind of axe the culture, axe what makes the airline special. You know, for, you know, what seems to be the more prudent financial reason.
I think the real question will be whether or not they were leaving money on the table, or whether those bags fly free was getting them more
was
business.
A feature. Yeah, was part of the magic.
Exactly, and I'm sure there's, you know, plenty of numbers to crunch on that, on what made sense. And there's certainly tweaks they could have made, but you know, one of the things, like the open seating and the boarding process that they had, love it or hate it, but hey, it got people to show up at the gate, and they were able to turn planes quickly, and because, you know, I mean, with other airlines, if I've got a guaranteed seat and I'm going to put my carry-on bag underneath the seat in front of me, final boarding call is my boarding group. Like, right. So often I'll board at the very, you know, last minute. I mean, with Southwest, you know, I was standing in line wherever I was, A53 or whatever it was, that flight, to get on as soon as I could, just so I could get the best seat and get up, you know, get on, avoid a middle seat. I think that, you know, by leaving that behind, sure, people hated that, but, like, hey, I feel like they gave them operational efficiencies. And also, you have, you know, they're now having to gate check bags for the first time in forever, because no one wants to, you know, pay, you know, whatever the fee is for the carry-on bag. It's just, I feel like it's such a short-sighted, you know, looking at spreadsheets and thinking that we can make this much more money if we add these fees. But I'll leave Southwest grievance behind for now. I know we got to move on.
So well said. So that's our grievance portion. Now let's move to feats of strength. Traditionally, this is your favorite redemptions or miles and points usage over the course of the year, but we can switch this up. We'll do one towards an airline or loyalty program, just as we did with the grievances, and one towards a bank. Doesn't have to be best or best value, but the one that defined your 2025 or that you're going to remember going forward. Why don't we start with Tom this time?
Sure. You know, I had to think about this for a little bit. You know, I have to, I just kind of looked back at what my redemptions were from an airline perspective. And, you know, one or two did, you know, kind of jump out at me. You know, one of them obviously is just, actually they're both with Alaska's, you know, Atmos program. I did a lot of redemptions with them this year. And first of all, you know, one of the great things that has happened with them is obviously is they have a tremendous award chart for these one-way American Airlines flights. They really have taken kind of the place of BA, Avios from back in the day. And so I've done so many of those this year, you know, 4,500 miles up to Chicago or other, you know, close-in places from National. I mean, we're constantly using those all the time. They do a great job there. I also redeemed recently with them to cross the Atlantic on Iberia for my first ever Iberia flight. And that was quite a good value, I thought. So it was only $45K for business. It was on kind of an interesting product, too. It was on their new narrow-body A321 XLR business class cabin on a narrow-body, which, you know, was pretty nice. Mind you, you do miss the pre-departure beverage. They're not very good about that on narrow bodies, but otherwise, you know, I thought it was a very nice flight.
I really think that Atmos and its predecessor Mileage Plan, Alaska Mileage Plan, when they moved to that distance based, I think a lot of us were sort of like, oh no, this is going to be bad. But the reality is they've just had so many great values, so many sweet spots with this mileage based redemption now. JT, any thoughts on that, or do you want to jump to your loyalty program, Feet of Strength?
Well, I pulled one out of the backup because I do agree, Alaska has been incredible. I've booked so many of those 4,500 short haul ones on American. That's just such a great sweet spot. But I've been hopping through Europe a lot this year. For listeners who don't know, my wife and I both turned 40 in 2025, so we set a goal of visiting 40 different countries in 2025. And Europe has a lot of countries, so we were bouncing around Europe a lot. One redemption we booked using Alaska miles was 15,000 Alaska miles for Finnair business class. We went from London to Helsinki, and on that route they have their lie-flat business class, their A350, their new suites. So even though it's a few hours, it was like an incredible redemption for 15,000 in business class. We actually connected onward from Helsinki after hanging out in the sauna in the airport lounge, the Finnair lounge that has a sauna, and then we flew off to Stockholm, all for 15,000 Alaska miles. And that's just such an incredible deal that I definitely had to throw that in because Alaska, the new mileage chart is just excellent. Or there's excellent value to be found. It's not always excellent.
Not always excellent, but there's a lot of nice redemptions that are available to the program and that are great value. But by the way, I saw that. Were you able to take the Finnair flight with the, what is it, the non-reclining business class seat?
It was fine, and especially for like the 3-hour flight where I was mostly just sitting up and hanging out and enjoying the seats. I also flew it earlier this year from Tokyo to Helsinki. Yeah, that was a bit longer indeed. That was really it was interesting because I personally like to kind of recline and relax, especially for like overnight flights as kind of a winding down after takeoff. So didn't really get that as well. I mean, I put some pillows to kind of create a sort of recline, but from an actual bed standpoint, I feel like it was great, and that it's a very unique product for sure.
I am very much looking forward to it. I mean, Trevor, we got to find a way to fly that one of these days. That's definitely one of the seats that I'm most intrigued by in the business class category.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was a little bit skeptical of it, but I think I'm ready to give it a try.
Yeah, and plus, I in general like Finnair. I just think they do a good job of, you know, putting a lot of like interesting touches, you know, from Finland into their service, you know, whether it be like, you know, blueberry juice or, you know, the special glasses that they have, or, you know, the other things. They just have lots of little touches.
Yeah, and the Marimekko, if I'm pronouncing it right.
The Marimekko, yep.
And the sauna. I'm trying to think to myself whether or not I would find that to be an attractive thing to spend some of the time in the airport lounge doing. I mean, I feel like most airport bathrooms, like the showers, are all saunas themselves, right? Like you,
it's true. They just no can't ventilation. Get the
yeah. Exactly. I mean, and so like, and now I'm going to skip the shower, or well, I'll obviously take the shower afterwards, but and then just go into a sauna, which is effectively you know what I'm used to anyway. I don't know. I feel like I'd have to try it out at least once.
it's such a unique experience. And like every time my wife and I have been in there, it's very rarely like used by other guests. So it kind of feels like a personal experience for us. There's male and female showers and baths to get ready. And then you're supposed to just, you know, have a towel, not be, you know, completely naked and in the airport sauna. They have a nice little like resting area outside the sauna with like lovely music and like lights and stuff like that. It's just, it's such a cool experience. Hopefully you get to try it once at least.
I'll tell you, JT, that sauna is going up the list. I don't know if it's at the top, but it's getting up there. It's getting up there.
Well, we might have to hang out there, book one of these 15K Alaska Airlines flights through from London to Helsinki and onward. You can try out both the lie-flat business class seat on a 3-hour flight, see if you like it, and then maybe check out the sauna while on the connection.
Tom, it's the next 10-hour layover, 10-hour lounge layover.
I don't think there's 6 lounges, though, you know, within, you know, walking distance of each other, though, unfortunately, in Helsinki. But, yeah, I think the Helsinki lounge will be fun to visit regardless.
Absolutely. So, JT, did you have any other feats of strength that you wanted to cover before we move on?
Yeah, I apologize for having to, but I have to brag on booking the Japan Airlines new business class seat. This is the closing door international business class seat they have on the A350-1000. I did book it with American Airlines miles, flying from Atlanta, Dallas, Dallas to Tokyo, Haneda for just 60,000 American Airlines miles plus $5.60. It's truly one of the best deals around if you could book it. Definitely set up CSNA Aero alerts if you're looking to book that, because it is very rarely available, and when it is available, it disappears quickly. But that is such an incredible redemption, and I absolutely loved it. I will spend 60,000 American Airlines miles for that product anytime I can find it.
Yeah, and that's a great one. We had the chance. I don't even think we went out of our way to fly that, Tom. But we flew that from, wasn't it Haneda to JFK in June?
Yep, we did. Awesome. I thought it was a great product. It was. I completely echo your thoughts. We booked it with A-Miles too, I think, Trevor, right?
And yep, exactly.
And absolutely great product. Amazing seat. I think JAL kind of kicked it out of the park with that. The service is usually just excellent. Catering is usually good as well. A lot of good things to say about that redemption.
Those in-seat speakers are interesting.
Yeah, they are.
They are interesting.
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, I don't think they always work. I did try to use them, and they kind of work, but...
Yeah, it wasn't good enough for me. I went back to the headphones, too. But I think they're cool, and I think they're innovating, and I love innovation. Even if it doesn't work out of the gate, it's just great that they do it. So I want to go on a tangent here, JT, because yeah. I'm observing that American seems like they're getting more space, whether it's with JAL and Qantas, and in fact, they're not sharing their space with Atmos. Like, it used to be that you could book almost anything that you could book with American miles, you could book with Atmos. And I feel like I'm seeing much less redemption opportunities with the Alaska Atmos program of late. Are you seeing this? Is there a reason behind this that you might have observed?
I have not seen that, but that would be a very concerning. I've seen lots of phantom availability on Alaska Airlines. I feel like that's been a huge problem for Alaska, especially when, you know, we're trying to book, trying to plan our trips. And we're like, oh, cool, there's availability. Let's, you know, piece around it and then go to book it. And there's nothing actually, it's not actually bookable. But I haven't run across that where it is available to American or other partners and not Alaska, at least yet. That'd be a concerning development if that seems to be the case.
Yeah, I think I've seen that a little bit, Trevor, just looking, you know, even for domestic legs and things where, you know, it's available, you know, for, let's say, 7,000 AA miles, but not available to Atmos flyers. So I don't think that's that unusual. I think there's definitely some dates or things that are blacking out, you know, for Atmos redemption. You know, I think that that's not great for us Atmos, you know, currency holders, but at the same time, it just makes the AA miles even more of a currency that people want to collect or transfer to.
Yeah, I definitely have found that AA miles are much more valuable at this point, which is a shame because I think we're sitting on over almost 2 million Atmos miles at the moment.
Wow.
Well, this is a long story and relates to the to my grievance of Amex shutting down my P2. Had to get the miles out one way or another, and still lost some a decent amount of miles. Mm. So for my loyalty program, I wanted to highlight a staple of this podcast, and that is Lufthansa First Class Close In Awards are still around. It's just different.
All close and, in.
We booked Saturday and flew Sunday.
Yeah, that's about right. Yeah, no 14 yeah. days anymore. It's more like 1 to 3 days, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, and that I'm sad about. But that loyalty, or from a loyalty feat of strength, we got what was it, 10 or 12 hours in a lounge, and I thought it was just so cool to be able to say that you've done that. You know, spent that much time in a lounge. We were able to hop between the main first class lounge and then the first class terminal as well. And I think we had a good time. We'll have that story, that travel story episode out probably prior to Festivus going live. And so to our listeners, if you haven't listened to it, go back and do listen to it. And you'll hear how we ate more meals in lounges than I think we actually paid for on that trip.
By a huge margin.
Yeah. Like I think it was like 20% of meals.
I think we paid out of pocket for like what, two meals for like a week.
It felt like it. It felt like that.
But I think longtime listeners of the podcast will probably not be surprised again that Trevor is praising Lufthansa First Class, one of his obviously favorite things to do on an airplane.
I tell you, this Festivus episode unintentionally is covering so many of the staples of this, and I mean, we've talked Emirates, we've talked Lufthansa, we've talked Southwest, we've talked American, we've talked Alaska.
The usual suspects are coming to the episode, or not too many surprises, I guess.
yeah, not too many surprises.
Oh, I've got a different one once we move to the card section. I think this is one that's kind of out of left field for a lot of listeners.
Well, and it's funny that you say that, JT, because I was going to pivot toward you and highlight the fact that you are talking about a brand that we don't necessarily give a lot of loyalty to or a lot of coverage to for your feat of strength.
Yeah, this is one that so my wife and I have had the Amex Hilton Aspire card for several years. Gives you top tier for now, Hilton Diamond status before they roll out the new Diamond Reserve next year, but plus a practically unlimited free night. And so for the past few years, my wife and I have stacked our Aspire free night awards to go to the Maldives. In each of the last, I think, 4 or 5 years, we've been to the Maldives. My wife loves it. I love my wife, so we go to the Maldives. So this year, we have been making our rounds to all the different Hilton properties in the Maldives, and this year we saw that there's an SLH property, it's bookable through Hilton, called Baros. And Baros was completely not on my radar before this trip, but hey, it was close. It's actually a boat ride away from the Malé Airport. I think it's only about 20 minutes away. It's one of the original Maldives resorts, like way back when it was like German divers going there and staying in little shacks. It's much, much nicer now. They've renovated many times, upgraded over the years. But Baros was an absolute hidden gem, and still is, hidden gem in the Maldives through the Hilton program. So we redeemed two nights there. We weren't just in the Maldives for two nights. This was between two stays, between the late Meridian, and then we went off to Six Senses Lamu after this. But we spent two nights at Baros with almost nothing out of pocket, just food and drink. They didn't charge for transfer fees on free night awards, which I think they've started adding that now, so double check that if you're booking. But it was $1,100 per night cash rate for the nights we were there, booked into an overwater villa. Again, almost nothing out of pocket, just food and drink. And thanks to our Hilton Diamond status, we had free breakfast There's a cocktail hour or like a management happy hour or whatever where they give a bunch of free drinks one of the nights. So it was really just such a lovely property with an incredible house reef right there by Male. I really do recommend it if you do have the Aspire card as part of a larger Maldives trip. Go there. Again, it's only 20-minute boat ride away from the airport. Crash for a few nights, head back to the airport, and go off to whatever other aspirational property you want to spend more time at.
That sounds like a nice alternative to the is it the Sheraton in Maldives?
Yeah. I haven't stayed there. I've heard stories, though. That's just not great.
Well, I think the problem I had was the light pollution was just so bad there. That yeah. You really didn't, you just felt like you were on the outskirts of a city. You didn't necessarily feel like you're on an island in the middle of the middle of the ocean. And so, I mean, I think it's good to have an alternative, you know, shall we say, hey, I arrived late. I can only take a boat. I can't take a plane type hotel. And especially if you're able to get a free night award. And if you're able to get that much value, I mean, $1,100 per night, that's a pretty good deal.
Not bad. Again, definitely recommend it. And yeah, as you said, like sometimes, yeah, if you get in on one of those late flights, personally, Katie and I, the last couple of trips, we've actually crashed in Male at a property just so we can reset, get over some of our jet lag, and then catch like the first seaplane out the first morning. So we can maximize our time at a resort. But yeah, just think outside the box if you're planning a Maldives trip, whether it's going to the Baros or staying in Male.
You're making me want to go back to that St. Regis in the Maldives so badly, man. We were trying to go there this year and we ended up punting on the trip. I'm thinking maybe for my 45th, we'll get there in a few years. It's awesome. Just
Make such it happen. Cool.
Great suggestion. Yeah, definitely inspiring me to try to make it back there. It's been a couple of years since I've been there, so I'm very excited to go back.
Yeah. I was so skeptical on Maldives, and the forcing function for us to go to the Maldives was that our daughter was turning two, and I said, well, she's free on the Air Maldivian seaplane. And so, little did we know, she also ate free, which saved us a ton of money, knowing how expensive the Maldives food is. And so that was the forcing function. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to want to go someday in my life. Let's just do it now while we're getting some things, quote unquote, for free, right? We got extra, quote unquote, value. And I just was absolutely floored with the St. Regis and the overall experience at the hotel. Everything else I could leave, but they've got this brand new airport now, and I'm really excited to try to see that. Did you, when you were last there, was the airport open, JT?
Technically, yes. So
technically, there's a story here.
Oh yeah, no, we walked through a new terminal, and like there was all these jet bridges. None of the jet bridges were actually being used. They were still like pulling planes up to the gates where the jet bridges were, and then pulling upstairs. It was really weird because they just had a grand opening right before we came, with like drone show over the airport and all this stuff, and then like it was like a soft opening, like it really seemed to have been shut down like for the night when we walked through before we flew out. Like it was just technically open is probably the best way of putting it.
Wow, do they have lounges there now other than that one paid other than that one paid lounge?
So in the old terminal, there's the lounge that unfortunately we didn't get to visit this time because it's not actually a priority pass. We've always flown like Qatar Q Suites out, or at least Qatar Business Class, so we've always like had access to that lounge, and it's mediocre. I mean, it's fine. It's a nice place to crash for a couple hours. I don't know about the new terminal. I assume they have a lounge over there, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, we actually flew out premium economy, and it was an economy ticket booked on Vistara, and I was able to upgrade us to premium economy, which didn't really get us a whole lot, but a little bit of space and a little bit more comfort. And so we didn't even have any lounge access, which was very, shall we say, different for me.
Yeah, same. I mean, it was kind of weird to like show up and be like, okay, I've got a wallet full of priority passes. I have lounge, or I've got Elite Status with all these programs. But we were flying Emirates economy actually from Malé to Dubai. It was depart at 4 p.m., arrive at 7 p.m., something like that. And it was like 15,000 Emirates miles, and so it was just a no brainer to do that for us this time. But yeah, we had no way of getting into that lounge. Again, it's a fine lounge. It's okay. It's got some hot food. It's not the fanciest lounge, but it's a good place to crash.
Well, hopefully that lounge is short-lived, and there are many, many more wonderful lounges at the new terminal. Tom, let's shift to you. What was your card or bank feat of strength? Because I don't think you shared it in the notes, unless I'm misreading.
You know, I was thinking about that. You know, I would say one of the one of the things that I was thinking about might be something somebody else had mentioned. But in thinking about it more recently, I think one of the transferable currencies recently added a partner, which I thought was quite good. That was a new currency we talked about recently. What Rove, right? They started being able to transfer to Miles and More, which is, I guess, one of the only ones that is able to do that. And I see that as a little bit of a feat of strength because they have some very interesting award options. Unfortunately, not in aspirational cabins, but they've been, I think, some like 88 mile or like 2,000 mile awards across the Atlantic on various Lufthansa carriers, and I'm thinking, wow, those are kind of good deals. So, mind you, there's still about $200 in fees and other things, but still,
that few miles though.
Yeah, from a mileage efficiency perspective, that does seem very attractive. So I don't know, Tampa Zurich, I'm looking at you. Maybe I'll make my way down there and finally make it to Switzerland.
I mean, I 100% agree. Rove adding Miles and More is a game changer. It's almost a miracle. To foreshadow our next segment, the 88 miles is just incredible. However, that you need to have, is it like 7,000 miles in order to search awards, or maybe
2,000.
Yeah,
2,000 or 2,500. Some you need to at least transfer that many to be able to search. And I did have to do that recently just to be able to find those to confirm that they're actually bookable, I guess.
Which is so silly when the award is 88 miles, but you need to transfer in 2,000 in order to find it. And if you book the 88 mile award, you drop under that. You now have to transfer 1,000 more in.
That's true.
And they expire. They expire, or at least they used to. The other thing with Rove, though. I've had an account since like September or August, and I have all these miles from the shopping portal that are still pending, like all the way back to September. They're still pending. How long does it take? that's one of the challenges. But the thing that really surprises me about that program is that Bilt and Richard Kerr weren't able to get to it first.
Interesting that they are such a new player that they are the ones that got. That they're the first ones who are able to take a bite at that apple. You're right. That is a very interesting thing. But I will say the transfers from Rove to Lufthansa happened pretty fast. That was pretty instantaneous. So FYI,
it's the small victories. Yeah, I will take a fast transfer over a fast confirmation of points any day of the week because I try to plan ahead of time. I try to plan far out. But yeah, Miles and More, it's starting to become more and more attractive, and I think that's just a stellar answer. My bank feat of strength is probably the most vanilla of them all. Citi now transfers to American Airlines. We talked about how American is just amazing relative to some of the award space that we see to Australia and to Asia, and being able to transfer Citi thank you points. 1-to-1 transfer ratio has just been absolutely awesome. And I'm going to sort of roll this in and dovetail this because it sort of facilitated my miracle, my Festivus miracle, which I'll get to in a moment.
I think you can definitely argue against that. It's a pretty monumental change. I mean, it's something that people have been expecting for a long time, right? Like there was kind of not a huge, loud bang when it happened, right? Because people were like, oh, it finally, you know, we've been expecting this for months, right? But now that it's actually here, it is a pretty tremendous and very useful option for thank you point holders. I mean, it definitely makes thank you points a lot more valuable and a lot more usable than they were just a couple months ago.
I will say, although we were expecting, I feel it was more like we were hoping that it was eventually going to get added, because AA has been so insular, has not played well with others for the past few years, that it seemed like it was, AA was a transfer partner of Citi for a 3-month period back in 2021.
Oh, yeah.
And then yes. We all expected it was going to just be added at the end or shortly after, and then just nothing happened for years. And I was like, well, they tested it and they decided they didn't want it, is what, you know, I was kind of concluding. So I was very pleasantly surprised that they actually went through and added it. But especially with the American Airlines management over the past few years and how insular they've been. But yeah, definitely happy that they added this.
Well, I mean, I felt like when they ended the contract with Barclays, right, that was probably as good a sign as any that this was coming, right? And they had the exclusivity with Citi. So I feel like once that happened, they were like, oh, that's the shoe that's going to drop, but you're right. There was that time. And I remember I transferred quite a few thank you points at that time, during that short window when you were able to do some transfers. I do remember that, but it was quite the hiatus, right, between that and now. But in any case, yeah, I think the Trevor pointing out that particular feat of strength on the bank side is a pretty good choice. I like it. That's kind of why I was like, I saw that and I was like, oh, I want to pick that. That's a good one.
Well, and that's the thing. I felt like that was the most obvious transfer partner that never materialized until now. I mean, Citi didn't have the exclusivity. I get that. Mm-hmm. But Citi and AA were so closely tied. There was that one small window where they did have that transferability. It just felt to me like, what is taking these two companies so long to just work it out?
It fills out the troika, right? I feel like it's funny. You've got the big three airlines, you've got the big three alliances, you've got big three banks and transferable currencies. What is with that number three? We like those. It kind of completes out the trifecta, right? Where you've got now, one airline, one alliance, one bank.
Yeah. So well said. So well said. So we're getting to my favorite part of the episode, the Festivus Miracles. This is your deal of the year, or really anything that brought you the most miraculous joy in the Miles and Points game. This is why we play this game, gentlemen. So let's start it out. JT, you're our guest. We're going to go with you first. What is your Festivus Miracle?
Oh, I wrestled with this one. Looking back at all the redemptions I had and all the cards I signed up for, and I really couldn't top the one that I ended up choosing, which is the Turkish Million Mile Challenge. So for those who aren't aware, I think it was back at the end of June, Turkish Airlines announced this promotion where if you flew Turkish Airlines to 6 different continents within a 3 or 4 month travel window, you would get 1 million bonus miles. My wife and I were in Europe at the time. We needed to fly down to South America for a conference. And then after that, we needed to fly to North America for Katie's going to Boeing in Seattle. So we already needed to go to 2 of the hardest continents to get, or furthest continents at least. So we were able to piece together a trip where we booked a bunch of different tickets by the very shortened booking window. Suddenly shortened, Turkish Airlines out of the blue said, hey, actually, today is the last day to book this and to take this deal. And we put together a trip for $3,300 where we visited all 6 continents and pulled it off. The miracle was that Turkish actually came through and posted the 1 million miles. They waited till the second to last day in the booking window, or the posting window. They said they would post the miles between November 1st and 15th, and they waited till 13th or 14th. I'm trying to remember which one it was. So there's a lot of us who were wondering if they were actually going to post it. The actual
in suspense.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess they were trying to see if there's any way they could weasel out of it. Because it seemed like they had quite a few people who took advantage of this, and I'm sure they were minting a lot more miles than they wanted to. But yeah, it ended up posting, and although the onboard product was a lot to desire, we flew in economy the whole way through. We wanted to keep that out-of-pocket cost as low as possible, and we had a great experience in Turkish Airlines economy in the past. Mind you, it was back in 2013 and 2015, but like the Turkish economy food and like the pitch and the entertainment were all great. Turns out that's changed. Especially on Turkish Airlines A350, the pitch is 29 inches, and there is...
Oh, my.
Yeah, even elites, there's no extra legroom. There's only exit row seats. That's the only extra legroom you have. It's either 29 inches or business class. And that's your only options on the plane.
They've definitely gotten a little bit more stingy with the legroom lately, huh?
They sure did. Wow. So that was a kind of miserable experience, but hey, it's still the deal of the year for me.
That's still impressive. I'm in awe of those people. You know, there've been so many of these various challenges. You know, whether it be, you know, the SAS challenge and the Turkish challenge and you know the 20 for 20. There's been so many of these challenges lately. It's just kind of cool. I do feel envious. I would love to have done some of these, but you know, generally speaking, you know, I have not had the level of flexibility I felt to do them as easily. And I also wasn't exactly cherishing the idea of doing as much a coach flying as you need to be. Although, you know, that's not necessarily a thing to always, prevent it from happening. But I would say that's probably even bigger problem or impediment for Trevor. Well, guess what? I'm about to have a Festivus miracle with another miserable in-flight experience. Well, I'll start it off by saying, and I don't know if we'll do another episode about this, but you know, I did do a recent trip to Europe, and believe it or not, I did in fact do what I've been talking about quite a lot, which is actually book the return in coach. So I actually had a flight from France to Chicago for Chicago seminars. And it was in economy on Air France. And of course, the first leg canceled. So my 3 p.m. Arrival in Chicago did not happen as planned. Ended up arriving in Chicago at much later, about after midnight. So a good, what is that, 9 hour plus delay. But what's interesting about that, you know, this was French carrier leaving the EU. There is, in fact, an opportunity here. Hopefully some of you guys, listeners, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but, you know, the consumer protections when you're late and the cancellation is due to the airline's fault, not a, you know, weather related, but, you know, if it's an actual mechanical delay, which this was because they found like a crack in the cargo hold and they were like, yeah, we're not going to fly this plane today.
Yeah.
Probably better that way. Yes. So, you know, I ended up having multiple flights. I'm missing multiple flights at Charles de Gaulle. Finally, I think third time's a charm. I think it was the third flight that I was scheduled across the Atlantic that actually flew. And then actually, I'll take it back. I was it wasn't the in-flight experience that was horrible. It was the transiting through Charles de Gaulle, you know, trying to get on the right flight was the miserable part. But the actual flight itself on Delta was perfectly fine. I had a row to myself, and you know, the flight attendants were great, and service was good, and you know, I watched plenty of movies and everything. The miracle part was I did apply for the EU 261. Consumer protection, which means that you put a claim in with the airline when you're delayed more than 3 hours. And I put the claim in. I was paid and money was in my bank account, cash, within 2 weeks. I felt was crazy. I was not expecting it to be that quick. But I literally spoke to no one. I went on the website, put my details in, put in my e-ticket number, put the claim in, and then waited within 2 weeks. They approved it, and they put $695, which is, I'm assuming, into my bank account, which for a coach ticket, considering I think it was probably only a 12,500-mile redemption on Virgin Atlantic, I feel like, you know what, that's pretty good. I was pretty happy about that. I think that was pretty miraculous.
That is that it post that it posted so quickly too. Is I mean, it didn't have to fly it because I've never actually had any of these claims that I could make for eligible delay. I've had delays; they just weren't eligible. I figured you had to fight tooth and nail for these, and like they would eventually pay it out. Yes. But that does sound miraculous that they actually paid it so quickly.
I was expecting a battle because I there's one other time that I did. I was not successful because I had to go to a lawyer and I had to do some forms, and I was just a little bit too lazy to do it. So I didn't end up doing it after the initial claim was denied. So that was with Finnair, speaking of Finnair from earlier. But so I was one of two as far as my track record for getting these claims paid. But this second one was just so night and day where I was just not expecting it to be so straightforward and so easy. So, but I guess it was. So, you know, I think it was really fun sharing JT and my miracles. You know, I think they definitely are in the spirit of Festivus, but I think yours is a little bit more impressive and interesting and kind of a unicorn story. Is it not, Trevor?
Yeah, Tom, we got real lucky on this one. So for the past few years, we've been trying to get to Australia as a family, and it happens to be my mother-in-law's one of my mother-in-law's bucket list things. And so I wanted to try to make it work. And I think all of our listeners know that it's hard to get to Australia. Sometimes you'll see last-minute space, but to get premium seats, four of them, round trip, around the holidays, so you can celebrate New Year's Eve in world-famous Sydney Harbor, that is no small feat. And that is my Festivus miracle. We were able to fly. I suppose by the time this posts, we'll almost be flying. But we'll have the opportunity to fly on American's new 787. Is it an SP, JT? Or is it just a...
Just a yeah. P.
Ah, okay.
787-9P.
So we'll be able to fly the 787-9P on American, which has that expanded premium cabin and much nicer seats. JT, did you get the chance to check those out?
Yeah, I haven't checked out in the air yet, but I was invited by American Airlines to their media preview of the plane. So I got a chance for several hours to just explore every nook and cranny I could of the new plane.
Awesome. I know I'm really excited. I think the whole family is. We've flown so many different American premium products over the years between those the kind of yin yang seats that, like, if the person next to you kind of moves, you're rocking too, and you know. Some of the other seats that they've had. So this one looks like it's finally knocking the ball out of the park.
Yeah, no, it's much better than the rocking chairs, as Kitty and I call those.
I like that, the rocking chairs. Nothing like flying the rocking chairs on your way down to South America, for example.
Yeah.
But yeah, the long and short of this one, though, which I found interesting, was I had to use American miles. It's on American metal, as I mentioned. Alaska didn't have the space. In my searches, I didn't see Qantas having the space, but I didn't look as hard. It just definitely seemed to me like if you want to get to Australia, you need the American miles much more than you need partner miles. I don't know if you guys have seen anything different on that, but that for me was a blocker for a good month or so as I was trying to generate more miles very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an impressive miracle. I mean, I think going to Australia in business class for four is hard enough, but the time of year, right, trying to do it around the holidays, that's even more impressive, I think, and
even
definitely
more
kudos to you. Absolutely, it's like there was a miracle, and you know, someone was able to find just the right seats in the right quantity at the right time. That's always something to celebrate, I think.
Absolutely, and what I'll share for our listeners is. For one way, because we had enough miles, I was able to book all four of us at the same time. For the other way, I was only able to book two, and space kept popping in and out, in and out. I'd see one seat with the ideal. I'd see another seat not. I'd see two seats, but I'd have to fly via, like, two double connection to be able to reunite. it was definitely one of those things where the space was constantly changing, and you just had to be consistently looking to be able to truly find that space.
Now, are you returning via Brisbane, or where are you actually coming back from?
Yeah, we're going to return via Brisbane as well, for one reason or another. So I don't know the true backstory, but a year or two, or maybe even 3 years ago, there was a lot of lift going into Brisbane. United was flying from San Francisco, maybe even Houston. American was flying Dallas and I think LA. And some of that space remains. And so we were able to find that space. And it's interesting. We'll try to find the link in the show notes. But Andy of Andy's travel blog flew this most recently, I think over Thanksgiving. And he specifically went out of his way to go up to Brisbane because of this particular aircraft. So it's a route that seems like it's sticking around, or so we hope. It's always had better space. To me, this is comparable to space to Auckland. I feel like if you're trying to get down to the South Pacific, Auckland and Brisbane are the ways to go.
Yeah, I would agree with that. You know, I had a cruise to Australia a few years ago, and I think my original way back was routed through Brisbane, and that was the only place where I found space. A little bit later, you know, obviously I kept guarding my reservation, and I found another flight that kind of worked a little bit better from Melbourne. So I actually ended up flying back from Melbourne instead of Brisbane. But, you know, for the listeners, you know, especially those who are trying to replicate your Festivus Miracle, I definitely recommend that people keep an eye out for the other gateway cities in Australia, because, you know, you don't always have to fly through Sydney. You know, there are other cities that have the Trans-Pacific connections back to the U.S. and Brisbane is definitely probably one of the ones where you're going to see more space, just because it is a less popular route and there's probably just, again, more availability.
I'm trying to there's some story behind that. I think it's because Brisbane is hosting the Olympics shortly, so yeah. I think they're trying to ramp up a bunch of the air capacity into there because of that. I think that's the reason. I'm trying to remember what the incentive was, but there's some sort of incentive that these airlines are all chasing right now.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that would make sense. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I remember the space down to Brazil when Brazil was hosting the Olympics was just crazy. I mean, you found some really cheap airfares, even cash fares. Okay, nobody has any thoughts on that one.
I'm still flabbergasted that you were able to pull off your miracle. I mean, again, this is like has almost always been, like, I feel like since the beginning of this game, you know, business class to Australia has been one of the, you know, most difficult and most sought after, you know, kind of like domestic, you know, first class to Hawaii or something. You know, there's always been these awards that people have tried to get but had difficulty getting. And I feel like the one you're the Festivus Miracle this year so well encapsulates, you know, just what has been just such a long time, you know, unicorn redemption, you know, for so many people. It's there's a couple of them out there, and I definitely think one of them is Australia during Christmas in business.
I love how you said that, because what it just made me think of, and perhaps it's so appropriate at this time of the year, is while so many things in this game have changed over the year and the years, some things have stayed the same,
yes.
Such as the difficulty of getting to Australia.
I feel like when we first met, you know, we're sitting at FTU and people are talking about this, you know, how hard it is to get, you know, tickets to Australian business class during Christmas. And here we are, you know, more than a decade later, and we're still talking about it.
Yeah. Yes. So true. So true, Tom. Okay. Well, shall we close it out?
Sounds good.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Okay. Well, actually, before we close it out, I should say, JT, why don't you tell our listeners how they can find you?
Hey, yeah, so I am currently the editor-in-chief at Award Wallet. So I run the Award Wallet blog, where we're doing about 50 posts each week on points and miles, news, guides, card reviews, all of the above. You can find me on pretty much every social at JT Genter, so it's JTGENTER. So Twitter, Instagram, I'm over 40 now, so I'm not on Twitch or any of those, but most places you can find me at JT Genter.
Awesome. And thank you so much for joining us for our Festivus celebration this year, JT. And I promise it was not because you complain on Twitter. It was because you have such a great pulse of the community, in so many different ways. And you bring a different perspective of travel than I think Tom and I do to the table.
Well, thank you. I do feel like I'm a professional complainer sometimes, or at least that's the tweets that people see. They don't see all the compliments I put on there. It's all the complaints that go viral.
Hey, at least he's not complaining about us, you know?
Well, the post hasn't published yet, right?
Yeah.
So thanks again so much, JT, for coming on. And we invite our listeners to comment on their Festivus miracles as well, whether it's in Slack, on the blog post. If you find this on iTunes or otherwise, feel free to reach out to us. We'd love to hear what your Festivus miracles are.
We love hearing from our listeners, and you guys are great. Happy Festivus to us all.
Happy Festivus indeed. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story, and even better, a Festivus miracle.